This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The General Services Administration's Public Building Service acquires space on behalf of the federal government through new construction and leasing and acts as a caretaker for federal properties across the country. It maintains a portfolio of over 9,000 owned or leased assets with an inventory of more than 370 million square feet of workspace for 1.1 million federal employees. And preserves more than 481 historic properties. The administration's recently proposed budget calls for more investment in the nation's public buildings. According to the administration, these investments will enable GSA to properly maintain and improve the real estate assets owned and paid for by the American people. What is GSA's Public Building Service doing to enhance the management of its real estate portfolio? What kinds of investments are being made to repair and maintain the nation's public buildings? And how is PBS better utilizing government-owned space, making federal real estate smaller and more efficient? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Dorothy Robine, Commissioner of the Public Building Service at the U.S. General Services Administration. Welcome, Dorothy. It's great to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher. Ken, welcome.
It's great being back. Thanks.
So, Dorothy, let's start off by learning a little bit more about your organization. Could you tell us a little bit more about the GSA's Public Building Service?
Sure. The Public Building Service is the real estate arm of the federal government. People refer to us as the landlord to the civilian agencies. I don't usually use the L word, though. We have a total of 375 million square feet of space. And it's roughly half federally owned space and half leased space, actually. It's a little bit more leased than owned, a total of about 9,600 buildings, and they're distributed throughout the country and territories of the United States.
So it's such a critical mission. How are you operationally organized?
We are very much of a regional organization. There are 11 regions, and they correspond pretty much to the divisions of the courts or other federal agencies. The largest is the National Capital Region. About a quarter of all of our space is in the National Capital Region, not surprisingly. That's where a lot of federal buildings are. And then 10 other regions, and the regions report up through the central office, my office. And then I report to Dan Tangerlini, the head of GSA.
So can I get a sense of the portfolio and how you organize? Do you have offices underneath your purview?
Yes, I have four major offices, portfolio management. They do all of the asset planning, and that includes client relationships, relationships with our customer agencies. The second one is design and construction of buildings. Another is leasing. And then finally, building operation and maintenance. And all of the energy and sustainability activities are part of building operation and maintenance. Those are the big areas.
And you're funded differently than most federal agencies, correct?
Yes. Since the early 1970s, PBS, the Public Building Service, has been funded with a quasi-revolving loan fund. Agencies pay us rent, whether they're in leased space or federally owned space. They pay us rent for the space that they occupy, and those rental rates are market-based. We base them on comparable commercial space. That money goes into something called the Federal Building Fund. And out of that fund, we pay to operate and maintain our buildings and then to pay the commercial lessors from whom we lease. The reason it's a quasi-revolving fund as opposed to a revolving fund is that Congress must appropriate the money that we use. Sometimes we get more than goes into the Federal Building Fund. And the last couple of years, and I'll say more about this as we go on, we've gotten significantly less than what has gone into the Federal Building Fund.
Great. Yeah, I'd like to focus more on your specific responsibilities as PBS commissioner. What are your duties and areas under your purview? But maybe more interestingly, what's a day in the life of a PBS commissioner, and how does your effort support GSA's overall mission?
So I oversee the Public Building Service, which is one of the two main business lines of GSA, and my immediate staff is the staff of the offices I described in central office. I would say I have three large groups of people that I am dealing with, managing in some sense. One is PBS employees, and there are about close to 7,000 PBS employees all around the country. A second group is our customer agencies, so the IRS and the Social Security Administration and the courts and the other agencies for whom we provide space. And then a third group is the congressional authorizers and appropriators. And so dealing with those three organizations. Now, also OMB and the White House, but we work so closely with them that I almost feel like we're part of them. But my job consists of trying to do strategic things with opportunities and constraints that created by those three groups of people.
So, Dorothy, with regarding your duties and responsibilities, what are your top three, say, challenges you've faced, and how have you sought to address those challenges?
Well, let me talk about challenges at two different levels, because I think the two overarching challenges are the budget and the organizational structure of PBS. The budget is a huge challenge because the last 3 years, we have not gotten access to all of the money coming into the Federal Building Fund. In fact, we have not gotten access to about $1 billion to $1.5 billion each year. So that's a significant amount. The amount of money going into the Federal Building Fund is money that I feel I should be reinvesting in buildings. I charge commercial rates to our federal customers for those buildings, and I feel that I owe it to them and to taxpayers to be putting that money back into our buildings. The last couple of years, $1 billion to $1.5 billion a year has been diverted from the Federal Building Fund into other activities. So Dan Tangerlini's and my biggest challenge is to try to get PBS back on a solid budget footing, meaning getting access to all of the funds coming into the Federal Building Fund to support our activities. We have a huge backlog of unmet repair and maintenance needs, including fire life safety issues, because we have not gotten access to that funding. So getting us back on a solid budget footing is absolutely critical to the future of PBS. I don't see how the organization can continue to function effectively if we don't get back on a solid budget footing. The second overarching issue is the organizational structure. And Dan has reorganized GSA in some key ways. He has centralized the financial, the data, and the personnel functions, consolidated them. I'm focused on the best structure for PBS. What PBS does is inherently very local in nature. We build, maintain, operate buildings. Buildings are very, very local. So the work that we do is inherently very, very local. But not everything that we do needs to be done in 11 places, and that is the way that that we're currently organized. But I think now we're dealing with perhaps an excess of regional autonomy. I think that may have contributed to the problems of a year ago that brought Dan and me into the organization. So we're trying to sort out what activities can we do on a somewhat more consolidated basis, not necessarily nationally, but on a zonal basis. We already do a few things. We do property disposal on a zonal basis, meaning in 4 to 5 zones around the country as opposed to one organization in each region. So budget and building the organization, structuring it for success are the overarching challenges. I have a couple of programmatic priorities also, which are challenges, which I can also talk about.
Well, those are two pretty big challenges you have on your plate, Dorothy, being the largest public real estate organization. I'm not going to use the L word. And and with those, you know, somewhat fraught with unanticipated and unexpected surprises. Maybe you can discuss some of the good surprises, and if you'd like to go down the path of bad surprises, that would be interesting as well.
I would say that surprised me more than anything, and perhaps it shouldn't, because much of the basic work that we do, building, operating, maintaining buildings, is commercial in nature. So the organization has evolved into one that has a lot of the characteristics of a commercial organization. And that was part of what Reinventing Government was about, and I think they succeeded at that. We also have some non-commercial functions, which I think explain why we're still a key part of the federal government. But that's been a surprise. I would say the big challenges and the not-so-pleasant surprises have been, number one, the age of the portfolio. It's a very aging portfolio, and this was true at DOD as well. On average, our buildings are 47 years old, and that is nearing the life expectancy for a commercial building. Second, the budget situation. I did not appreciate how dire the budget situation was that PBS was in. Third, because of the combination of aging buildings and lack of adequate access to capital, PBS has become more and more reliant on leasing as a solution, leased space as opposed to federally owned space. There is certainly a role for that, and that was true at DOD as well. But on balance, leasing is a more expensive real estate solution for the federal government than ownership. And so we prefer to have more ownership and less leasing.
All right. So how was your previous role with the U.S. Department of Defense, and how did that prepare you for your current leadership role?
Well, I think the two jobs are very different, but certainly it was helpful to have been at DOD. The DOD job, I was in the office of the Secretary of Defense. And so that job was more of a policy job, a policy oversight job. The PBS job is a management job. It's a big-time management job with 11 regions and 7,000 employees, and it's much, much more hands-on. I think one way in which DOD prepared me is that, and I saw this as well when I worked in the Clinton White House on military base reuse issues. Real estate is very political. When I was at DOD, I attended meetings of people who were senior to me. I was there because I had a portfolio that was highly politically charged. When you talk about expanding or closing a facility or a building, members of Congress, members of the community take note. And that is true at GSA as well. And I like that. I like that about it. I like the interaction. That is part of doing good public policy, is being attentive to those concerns. It's not everything, but it's a part of it.
So, Dorothy, given your experience, what are the characteristics of an effective leader? And what lessons have you learned and brought to shape the culture of GSA's PBS from your previous experience?
Well, I would say that setting priorities, having a vision, is part of that. At DOD, I made energy my vision, improving energy efficiency of and energy security of military installations. At GSA, I'm focusing on a different set of priorities, which I'll talk about. But I think identifying a couple of things, and in both cases, it took me a while to figure out what my focus was going to be. I didn't go in automatically knowing that. I had to listen to the organization and observe it before I could identify my priorities. And then I think empowering people to help implement those priorities. And I would say There are a lot of very, very talented people in the federal government, and there are some extraordinarily talented people. And being able to identify those really extraordinarily talented people and giving them the running room is a big part of what I tried to do at DOD and what I'm trying to do at PBS. So I think I have a good eye for talent. And I think I'm pretty good at trying to draw out a vision from the organization. I like to think it's bottom-up as much as top-down, and then communicating that. I spend a lot of time trying to communicate that vision and then identifying the right people to help carry that out.
What is GSA's Public Building Service doing to enhance the management of its real estate portfolio? We will ask Dorothy Robine, Commissioner of the Public Building Service at the U.S. General Services Administration, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Is there a recipe for successful cross-agency collaborations that are enduring? Or is each initiative so dependent on context and personality that there's no way to offer general principles of success? Well, an IBM Center report by Dr. Jane Fountain, Implementing Cross-Agency Collaborations, a Guide for Federal Managers, offers advice on successful cross-agency relationships. Fountain says there's, in fact, a recipe for success, but it depends on the number of factors. Go to businessofgovernment.org, download Jane Fountain's report, and find out. That's businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dorothy Robine, Commissioner of the Public Building Service at the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us from IBM is Ken Beecher. So, Dorothy, you'd mentioned earlier about the key strategic priorities you're pursuing as head of PBS. Could you outline those for us?
Sure. The first is right-sizing our portfolio. There is no alternative to that. And what that means is a combination of things. But trying to get federal agencies to reduce their space requirement and increase their utilization. Technology and other things have made it possible now for agencies to carry out their mission with less space. People now telecommute. They travel a great deal. They are not in their offices nearly as much as they used to. This is true in the private sector as well. And so we don't need as much individual space, number one. And number two, for reasons of communication and collaboration, we want to facilitate people being in more collaborative space. So it's a combination of getting agencies to reduce their requirement, but also embrace this more open, collaborative workspace. That creates opportunities then to dispose of property when you can consolidate agencies into smaller amounts of space that then creates excess capacity that we can then dispose of. So right-sizing the portfolio, number one priority. Second priority, reducing the costs of operating our buildings. Making our buildings more intelligent is a key way to doing that. We think we can reduce our costs of energy and operation by as much as 50 cents a square foot, which is an enormous amount. So smart buildings and more energy efficient, more sustainable buildings. Those, having our buildings be more sustainable makes economic sense. It makes environmental sense, but it also makes economic sense. So reducing the costs of running our buildings. And then the third priority is leveraging private capital. Because we, unlike a private building owner, are limited to the money that's in the federal building fund, we need to figure out a way to leverage private capital. And there are a number of creative authorities that we have. The one that we're looking at most closely now is something called exchange authority, where we exchange some property that we have that we think someone else could make better use of, and we trade that for construction services or a building or a piece of property. And I can talk about some examples of that as well.
Right. Well, I mean, you did mention that GSA has about 9,600 buildings, 8,100 leases, and 1,500 buildings that are federally owned. And you touched lightly on the asset management piece. And so we're kind of curious, what performance and process improvements are you pursuing to optimize the management of this portfolio?
Well, we have our portfolio management division approaches portfolio management very much like a commercial building owner. And we have a very rigorous and data-based approach to analyzing each building in terms of what the customer base is, what the market is, and characteristics of the asset itself. So is it a high-performing building from an economic sense? Is there a solid customer base for it? And is it an asset whose reinvestment needs are ones that we can afford? So every year we analyze each of our assets from those standpoints, and we identify the well-performing assets, and then we identify those that are not as well-performing, and in some cases we will make a decision to get rid of those and replace them with something else. So it's a very data-based approach based on the condition of the asset, the conditions of the local market, and the needs of the of our customer agencies.
So once you identify a high-performing asset or a high-valued asset, I mean, how does GSA then optimize that asset?
Mm-hmm. Ideally, by maintaining the condition of the building, and that requires investment, and that's why our budget situation is so critical. And then the fact that a building is fully occupied doesn't necessarily mean it's being utilized to the degree that we think it can be. So again, going back to what I talked about, right-sizing our portfolio, we are trying to, through upfront investment where possible, reconfigure buildings so that they can accommodate more people, so that we can increase the utilization of our buildings.
So, Dorothy, for folks who don't necessarily understand PBS, your federal civilian agencies are your customer.
Right.
And I want to get a sense of how you help them address their current and future needs of real estate. And in particular, how does the client portfolio plans factor into your efforts?
Right. We have kind of a dual role. PBS is, on the one hand, we are very customer-friendly. We try to be helpful to our customer agencies. On the other hand, we do have a control function. We were created to serve that role. It's, I think, why we continue to be part of the federal government, and it's almost a dotted line to OMB, and that it's with our control, our sheriff hat on, if you will, that we are trying to get agencies to dispose of excess property to increase their utilization. So we work with them on something called client portfolio plans, where we look at their portfolio and try to identify opportunities for them to reduce their space requirement. Typically, agencies are open to doing this. The problem is a lack of upfront funding. So we try to identify ways to do that. We've requested money in the budget, and I'll say more about that later, to provide for that kind of consolidation.
You had mentioned a couple of times the disposable real property, the disposing of real property. Could you tell us a little bit more about that process and how you go about doing it? And more particularly, what's the progress in this area in terms of square footage and cost savings?
Well, I'll say the good news and the bad news. I would say the good news is that there is a strong culture within GSA for promoting property disposal. There used to be an entire service within GSA, just like PBS is a service. There was an entire service devoted to disposal. And I heard a story from someone at OMB about a trip to a military base. This is when DOD was responsible for disposal of military property, and the OMB gentleman and the head of the GSA disposal service traveled to Florida to an Army base, and the word got out that they were coming, and by the time they got there, the Army had literally moved tanks onto the property that GSA was going to look at. So we take disposal seriously. We think it's a good thing to get rid of property, but it's not an easy thing to do. There are, and GAO has written some very good reports about the impediments to disposal, and I know this well from my work at DOD. So my very strong view is that in order to do disposal in a serious way, and in the way that I believe Congress wants us to do, we need to have a civilian BRAC, a civilian version of the base realignment and closure process that the Department of Defense has. It would not be nearly as painful as BRAC is, but I think it would help enormously with the impediments that agencies face to getting rid of property.
What are some of those impediments?
Sure. Yeah. The biggest, I think the single biggest one is the upfront cost of getting rid of property. It takes some expenditure to get rid of property, and you can see that at DOD. Typically, the Defense Department will spend several billion dollars upfront to implement a BRAC round. They've got to, in order to move something and consolidate it, move it from one location, consolidate it in another location, they've got to build something new. It takes upfront expenditure in order to reduce the federal footprint. Agencies don't have money for that. A civilian BRAC process would provide for that funding. Second impediment is various legal requirements associated with disposal, and under BRAC, typically those are streamlined. And then the third impediment, and it perhaps is the biggest one of all, is various stakeholder interests. This is sort of the opposite of NIMBY, not in my backyard. This is, you know, don't take it out of my backyard. It can be the community. It can be members of Congress. And the beauty of the BRAC process is that there is an independent commission that looks at a variety of alternatives and identifies the best ones. Then collectively, Congress has to vote up or down on those. They cannot cherry pick. They cannot take individual things off the list. It's all or nothing. This was an idea conceived of by Dick Armey, a Republican member of Congress from Texas. It is not perfect, but it has served very, very well. It saved the Defense Department $100 billion. Every year, they save $8, $10, $12 billion, depending on how you count. That is savings that accrues every single year and will indefinitely. We need to be doing that on the civilian side as well.
You know, along those themes of saving money, you know, the administration proposed a bill that would usher in a new approach to the federal real estate, and that was the Civilian Property Realignment Act. What can you tell us about this proposal and how would it improve real estate management decisions?
Well, that is the Obama administration's civilian BRAC, and it is very much a civilian BRAC process. I went to months of meetings at OMB when I was at DOD. We were not going to be part of it, but they were interested in how it worked at DOD, and they tried. OMB tried to not use the term BRAC because it is a four-letter word on Capitol Hill. It is a process that members associate with pain. And so we tried to not use the term BRAC. But at the end of the day, there really is no other way to explain it other than a BRAC-like process. And that is the two key things that I mentioned earlier, this independent commission that looks at a variety of alternatives teed up by the agencies, or perhaps some that have not been teed up, makes a recommendation based on independent expertise. And then those recommendations require an up or down vote by Congress. No cherry picking, just all or nothing, up or down.
You know, Siddhartha, what's interesting is, so as you're educating Michael and I on BRAC, the civilian BRAC, and this Realignment Act, how are you training or how are you communicating that to federal agencies, and how are you supporting them in this opportunity?
Well, we need the authorization from Congress in order to do it. We can't do this on our own, which is why the Obama administration proposed legislation. And I think there is a general recognition that it's a good idea, and there were a number of proposals from the House and the Senate to do something similar, but none of them went far enough. And I'll leave it to OMB to get into the details, but I would say that none of the proposals went far enough. The House proposals exempted a number of agencies, probably because that's the only way they could get co-sponsors for the bill. And I would say they were equivalent to a DOD BRAC process that exempted the Navy and the Marine Corps. they were very, very partial, and you really need to have an approach that includes all federal agencies.
How is GSA's Public Building Service better utilizing government-owned space, making federal real estate smaller and more efficient? We will ask Dorothy Robine, Commissioner of the Public Building Service at the General Services Administration, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Pundits warn about the fiscal cliff, but federal agencies nearly every year hold up the budgetary sky while walking on the edge of a cliff. It's called the world of continuing resolutions and potential government shutdowns. The IBM Center report, The Cost of Budgetary Uncertainty, Analyzing the Impact of Late Appropriations by Dr. Phil Joyce, examines the impact of late budgets on the efficiency and effectiveness of government operations. To find out more about the cost of budgetary uncertainty, go to businessofgovernment.org. That's businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dorothy Robine, Commissioner of the Public Building Service at the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us from IBM is Ken Beecher. So, Dorothy, I understand that PBS is looking at ways to exchange real estate. For instance, the FBI building, you were looking to exchange that for another more suitable modernized building that would work better for the mission of today's FBI. Can you tell us a little bit about this process?
Sure. And it's also a way of leveraging private capital. And the FBI building is a great example. The J. Edgar Hoover building occupies two city blocks on downtown Washington. Very, very valuable property. It was built in 1974. It was built to be a giant filing cabinet. It was to house fingerprint records, thick cement block walls, wide corridors for pushing big files down. It was built for secrecy. It's a very inefficient building. It has a large courtyard and a veranda for viewing parades. I don't believe that was ever used. The building is aging, so it's becoming functionally obsolete. It doesn't meet the FBI's security needs, despite the fact that it has a moat around it. And it houses only about half of all the FBI headquarters staff. The FBI has grown considerably since 9/11. So it no longer meets their needs, including their needs, I should say, for collaborative workspace. The FBI recognized after 9/11 that they were not communicating well internally, much less with other agencies. And so they have sought this kind of collaborative workspace in their field offices, and they would like that in their headquarters as well. So we have this very, what we think is a very valuable property, valuable to somebody else. We are proposing to the idea of exchanging J. Edgar Hoover for an existing building or a newly constructed building somewhere in the National Capital Region, something that would be up to 2 million square feet of space and house roughly 11,000 people that are about half of whom are in leases around the National Capital Region. It could be in Maryland, Virginia, the district, lots of interest on the part of all three jurisdictions. We put the idea out there in a request for information. We got 35 proposals. We're working our way through those. And then probably the next step will be a request for qualifications. We're proposing something similar along for buildings and property along Independence Avenue. This is 8 buildings and 22 acres that form a little triangle, Federal Triangle South, we call it. The Forrestal Complex, the Department of Energy complex of buildings, the two FAA buildings just east of there on Independence Avenue, Orville and Wilbur Wright, our own national regional headquarters at 7th and D Southwest, and then a former USDA building, the Cotton Annex, that is behind Forrestal. Those buildings are all space and energy inefficient. They're aging buildings. We think that, again, that the property could have more value to someone else. The only workers that need to stay in that location are the Department of Energy workers, the FAA can go a number of other places. We would like our own regional headquarters folks to come into the GSA headquarters building at 18th and F. So there's some opportunities there to take our aging buildings and redevelop the property and do so in a way that supports the vision of the District of Columbia and the National Capital Planning Commission for a mixed-use eco-district. Mixed-use meaning residential and commercial as well as government space in that area. We think it can do a lot to further a major transformation of that part of the city that is envisioned as part of this district, eco-district plan.
Very interesting. I wanted to understand, switching gears a little bit, about we've talked about right-sizing the portfolio, improving portfolio performance. How are you using and how is PBS using analytic tools and analytics to do just that?
Of course, we're continually analyzing individual properties to determine how much investment they need and whether this is a property that we should hang on to or something that we should get rid of. We're also using data to try to identify opportunities for consolidation. So we're taking a very data-based approach to looking at where are there leases that look like they could be consolidated, or where are there leases that are expiring such that we could move people out of them into owned space. All of this is a very data-based exercise. What we are finding is that we need to supplement the data with what the intelligence agencies would call human intelligence. So our experts on the ground, other experts on the ground in a particular community that will say, no, actually that, you know, the Coast Guard needs to be there because that building is on the water and the one that you're thinking of isn't on the water. The FBI needs to be there because that's where their interviews take place. So we combine this very data-based approach with local intelligence in our regional offices and come up with a plan to move forward.
Dorothy, we were talking a lot about enhancing the performance of aging buildings. And to some extent, I know GSA has been very proactive in sustainability, in that not just refurbishing buildings, but making it more energy efficient, which also saves money. Would you elaborate on PBS's efforts to incorporate sustainability and energy efficiency into the construction, maintenance, and operations of its assets? And really specifically, one of the exciting things, I know we talked a little bit about smart buildings, is talk about the Green Proving Ground, where you're looking at working with other industries and sectors.
I feel very, very passionately about the importance of the federal government's role as a testbed for next generation building energy technologies. There's a tendency when you talk about technological innovation and the federal government's role to focus on the supply side, the federal government as a funder of R&D. And that's obviously a hugely important role. But the federal government has also traditionally played a very important role on the demand side as an early adopter of new technologies. Semiconductors is a recent example. There are GPS, radar, and there are many, many examples where we're an early adopter and then where our demand for a product helps to jumpstart the market for that technology. When it comes to energy efficiency for buildings, that's a huge area. Buildings account for 70% of all electricity usage. If you could reduce the energy consumption of buildings in this country, it would be equivalent to taking most commercial vehicles off the highways. I mean, they are an enormous contributor to energy consumption. And so we are not going to solve our energy problem without improving building energy efficiency significantly. The energy efficiency of buildings has not gone up significantly in the last 30 years. And the reason for that is a variety of impediments to commercialization of new technology. That's part of the problem. The building industry is very fragmented. There are split incentives, meaning the landlord has a different incentive than the tenant. an early adopter of new technology bears significant upfront costs with no additional return. So there's an important role for the federal government to play as an early adopter. And I made that my, within the energy area at DOD, I made that my highest priority. DOD is a technology agency with a very deep test and evaluation culture. And we had a wonderful test bed program still do there, which I made a very high priority. GSA has a wonderful test bed program called the Green Proving Ground, using our buildings as a beta site for testing new technology. It has not been quite as risk-taking as the DOD program and as I would like to see it be, but we're moving in that direction. I want us to be helping to overcome barriers to commercialization. I think that's the appropriate role for the federal government to play here, is to identify what the barriers are and where, what are the technologies where, by demonstrating the technology, we can help overcome one of the barriers to commercialization. So we began the Green Proving Ground in FY11, or GSA did. We've got a bunch of technologies underway. I can talk about them if we have time. But I think that's an incredibly exciting area. Now, other things that we're doing, more fundamental things, when we build something new, it has to be LEED Gold or the equivalent and compliant with Energy Star. The same is true for when we do major renovation. We have advanced meters in most of our high energy consuming buildings. We meter 90% of our electricity consumption. So we have advanced meters in 450 buildings that account for close to 90% of our energy consumption. That allows us to track what how these buildings are performing in real time and to measure our progress. We have met the statutory and OMB benchmark for reducing energy intensity by 3% a year. We are a year ahead of schedule. We have reduced our energy intensity relative to a 2003 baseline by fully 24%. So we are a year ahead of schedule. Not many agencies have met that goal. We are meeting that one and a variety of other energy goals.
You know, PBS has been publicly very focused on sustainability in their buildings. I'm kind of curious, because you did mention about getting commercial vehicles and airplanes off the street, out of the air, from a supply chain perspective. So does PBS support modernizing and greening the supply chain?
Yes, we very much so. We're working with other federal agencies as part of the, I believe it's called the Green Gov Supply Chain. This is a voluntary organization between federal suppliers and federal agencies to identify greenhouse gas emissions that the suppliers generate and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So that's one voluntary effort underway. As part of our contracts and our RFPs for everything from cleaning products to furniture in our buildings, we make sustainability and as measured in a variety of ways having to do with energy consumption, water consumption, chemicals, bad chemicals. We make that part of it. So we build that into the acquisition process. It becomes very much part of the acquisition process for. And this is an area that the U.S. Green Building Council is putting more and more effort into keeping harmful chemicals out of our buildings, and so that's a growing focus for us as well.
And Dorothy, I want to go back to the area around innovative office solutions and what PBS is doing in that area. We talk about mobility, government mobility, that workers are collaborating more. How is the workplace changing to fit the new trend?
There's a variety of different ways to approach it, and there's some beautiful commercial furniture solutions out there. It's, you know, tailored to individual agencies, and it involves a rebalancing of personal space and an amenity space. So typically what it means is less personal space, but more amenity space, conference space, and other kinds of space. Workers, I find, because I don't have an office, I just have a workstation, I need quiet places to go. I do have a beautiful conference room, and there are a number of quiet spaces where people can go, and that's very critical. So having a mix of types of space with the appropriate furniture and IT solutions. And that takes some upfront spending. You can't typically just move the furniture around. You actually have to reconfigure the space to accommodate that. But we're doing that at our headquarters at 1800 F. We had the luxury of being able to invest about $100 million in that. But among other things, it's resulted in a space that is much more sustainable and energy efficient, and that will accommodate twice as many people. So we're going from 2,200 to more than 4,000 people in that space.
Very innovative. So, Dorothy, as we close this segment, I wanted to understand, are there any plans to construct new buildings or complete modernizations over the next few years?
Oh, yes. But I would say the emphasis is very much on modernization as opposed to new construction. We are doing relatively little out-and-out new construction and by and large, renovating what we have.
What does the future hold for GSA's Public Buildings Service? We will ask Dorothy Robine, its commissioner, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. How do leaders direct ambitious change and achieve significant goals? What strategies do they use to overcome opposition and win allies? And how do specific organizational and political contexts affect strategies and outcomes? These are important age-old questions. To help answer them, the IBM Center has released Forging Governmental Change by Professor Harry Lambright. Lambright has identified two premier government leaders, Dr. Robert Gates of DOD and Dr. Francis Collins of NIH, who have led transformations within their own organizations. By all accounts, both men have been effective leaders of change. This report continues the IBM Center's long interest in leadership and transformation. So go to businessofgovernment.org and download Forging Governmental Change, Lessons from Transformations Led by Robert Gates and Francis Collins. That's businessofgovernment.org. There you can download all Center reports and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dorothy Robine, Commissioner of the Public Building Service at the U.S. General Services Administration. Also joining us from IBM is Ken Beecher. So, Dorothy, I have the pleasure of talking to many of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnerships among agencies and with the private sector to achieve mission results. How are you leveraging partnerships and collaboration to improve operations?
I said earlier that PBS is a very commercial-like entity. What that means in part is that we carry out almost everything we do through private partners. We use brokers for leases. We use leased space more now than federally owned space. We, of course, use private firms to design and construct our buildings and to maintain our buildings. At one time, PBS did a lot of those things internally. They had their own architects, their own building operators. We now do almost all of that through the private sector. That means that acquisition is absolutely a foundation of what we do. We are an acquisition organization, and we are trying to team more closely with our sister service, FAS, Federal Acquisition Service, to do that. So we rely heavily on the commercial sector and on competition to get us the best deal. We also partner with our customer agencies. That's a different sort of a relationship. And this goes back to the dual roles that I mentioned that we play of trying to be of direct assistance and as helpful as we can to agencies, but also playing this control function. And some people talk about these roles as being a pejorative term would be there have been times where PBS was largely an order taker, basically taking orders from federal agencies for if they said they needed a new building, a new courthouse or whatever, then we'd go out and build it. Other times we play, and in other modes, we play more of the sheriff role. I guess I like to think of our role as being a trusted partner, one where we do work collaboratively, but we are ever mindful of the need to reduce agency costs, improve space utilization. That's why PBS was created. It's still an important role that we have to play.
You know, you were just talking a lot about collaboration among federal agencies. Maybe we can shift to collaboration internally, in the relationships you have with each of your regions. You know, what are you doing to ensure how staff conducts business with integrity?
Well, I think creating a culture where that is clearly an important thing. And I think that is part of the PBS culture. I don't think that was ever, you know, there were a small number of, a very small number of bad actors. And I think there was an organizational structure in which perhaps regional autonomy had gone a little bit too far so that you didn't have in place some of the fundamental oversight mechanisms that any organization of the size and the budget that PBS has would need. So Dan tackled those by centralizing, by consolidating the CFO function, which had not previously been consolidated, the IT function, the personnel function. So centralization of that, much tighter controls on travel, on conferences, I think just communicating the importance, which I think, you know, 99.99% of all PBS employees know the importance of integrity to what we do.
Siddhartha, I hope you brought your crystal ball with you, as I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the future and what you see in the coming years. What's your sense of some of the key issues that will affect buildings, facilities, and real estate management government-wide?
Well, I think fundamentally the need to do more with less. I think this is true throughout the federal government, and it's true in the space real estate area as well, and it's why I think GSA generally, but PBS has a particularly important role to play in the coming years because agencies are looking to reduce their budgets, and space is an area, just like in the private sector, where they can do that, and we can help them do that. Part of the reason we're able to reduce real estate requirements is the growth of teleworking, and so I think managing that in a way that maintains high productivity, that enhances productivity, is critical. And I think making sure we continue to that teleworking is a way to accommodate workers, not a way to reduce real estate costs. I try to be very clear on this with PBS employees. I want to create workspaces that people want to come to every day. I would love to see all of my staff come to work every day. I'm not encouraging them to telework, and I'm certainly not encouraging anybody to telework in order to reduce real estate costs. I think teleworking is a way that we can accommodate people who prefer to work at home, who can be more productive at home. But I want us to be doing, encouraging it in order to increase productivity, not to reduce real estate costs. And I think we have to be mindful that we don't go too far in trying to reduce real estate costs in ways that have unintended consequences. I heard a panel of experts at a Urban Land Institute conference last week, and they said, you know, we think the space requirements will drop another 30%, and then the pendulum will start swinging back as people recognize the negative impact on productivity. Well, I think we're trying to be very mindful of that, but I think we have to be. Some companies have abandoned hoteling and gone back to more traditional workplace requirements. I think we have to be mindful of trying to do this in order to, for the right reasons, which is to enhance collaboration and productivity.